good evening, depending on where in the world you are, and welcome to this episode of Dark Reading Radio. New cybercrime crackdown could backfire and criminalize security professionals, an important topic, and we have a great panel to discuss. We'll get into that in just a moment, but first I want to remind you that in addition to the audio portion of our show, we have live text chat here. That's an important part of the total Dark Reading Radio experience, and all of our panelists will be joining that chat at the bottom of the hour. So this is a great time, if you're listening, to introduce yourself and go ahead and begin the discussion. Now, our host today is Kelly Jackson Higgins of Dark Reading. She'll be joined by Jeremiah Grossman, founder and CTO of White Hat Security, and Harley Geiger, advocacy director and senior counsel at the Center for Democracy and Technology. Well, it's about time to get started, so Kelly, I'm going to turn things over to you.
Great. Well, thank you, Kurt. We have a really hot topic here today that has definitely caught the attention of the security community. So just to sort of set the stage here a little bit, the good news is that the federal government's paying attention to cybersecurity and prioritizing it more. And the Obama administration has been pretty proactive in this space. But the bad news is that some of these proposals we're seeing have some potential unintended consequences. Security researchers have some pretty serious concerns about some of the legal and professional ramifications of the administration's new proposals to crack down on cybercrime. So the concern is that the idea of sort of tightening the screws on the bad guys could instead criminalize the good guys. So with me today, I have Jeremiah Grossman and Harley Geiger, so we can hack through this and understand better what might happen and what can be done to sort of prevent the good guys from getting penalized. So I wanted to kind of start, first of all, welcome both Jeremiah and Harley. And I want to start with Harley. Maybe you could break it down for us a little bit on the proposed legislation and bills in question. I know a lot of us are not necessarily Capitol Hill wonks, and I know you follow this stuff very closely. So wanted to get your perspective on sort of if you could just break it down on where things are right now and which bills are in question.
Sure, and thank you very much for having me on the program. So right now, I think what a lot of us have referred to most recently when we talk about introduced legislation is not actually legislation. It was a legislative proposal that came out of the Obama administration. And to my knowledge, that proposal has not been introduced in Congress as a bill. That doesn't mean that it can't happen at any moment, but right now it's just a proposal that's out there from the administration and is not yet in Congress. But these things often find a way of getting into bills at a later date. The Obama administration's proposal does several things. I think that the top three most important things to recognize about it are, one, that it adds a RICO predicate so it for CFA violations, so that if you violate the CFAA, you can also potentially be indicted under RICO. And RICO is used usually for capturing individuals who are part of the criminal enterprise but who aren't actually carrying out the crime. So it's the people who are giving the orders. And we view that is adding CFAA as a RICO predicate as potentially dangerous because it can encompass anyone who's part of an enterprise which has actually no definition. It's just any union or association of people. And online, associations of people are ridiculously easy to form. Now, think about all those 4chan users or people who put on a mask and say that they've joined Anonymous. And so the question becomes whether any of these users participate indirectly in the conduct of that enterprise. And if so, then even if they aren't in fact carrying out the CFAA violation, they could find themselves facing some pretty stiff penalties. The Obama administration's proposal enhances penalties almost across the board, and the CFAA's penalties are already quite harsh. And then perhaps the most important thing that the Obama administration's proposal does is it criminalizes trafficking in any means of access to a protected computer, which is any computer that is connected to the internet, if you have reason to know that the means of access will result in damage or unauthorized access to a computer. And so for a computer security researcher, if you find a flaw in a network or in a device, and then you traffic, that is, you share that the knowledge of that flaw or the way of getting access to the device or getting around or exploiting the security vulnerability, you could then potentially face, under this proposal, CFAA penalties if you have any reason to know that somebody might actually take your exploit and use it. But there are several other things that the proposal does, but I think that those are two of the most important.
Yeah, thank you for sort of distinguishing between proposed legislation and bills. That was a really good explanation there. Thank you. I didn't explain that very well at the beginning. And so I'd like to kick it over to Jeremiah to talk a little about the security community's concerns about these potential proposed changes to the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, and then the alliance with the RICO laws. Sort of I know there's been a lot of discussion in the industry about, you know, worries about what it could do for your day-to-day job. So I wanted to kind of get your perspective on some of the red flags you see here.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that was a great setup there. So I think, you know, when I read the proposed legislation, one of the things that's not immediately clear is why are they making the changes to the law in retrospect of, let's say, yesterday. What types of cases could they not prosecute where they now need to change the law, so such that all the new changes that were mentioned, does that actually solve the problem? So that's not immediately clear. And so, you know, I've been a security researcher for, you know, 15, 20 years now, and these changes, you know, it's a job of security guys to be concerned. But anytime you make these changes, everybody's going to kind of read around the lines and try to go, are they targeting me in the research that I'm doing? Because the words that they use are sufficiently ambiguous. And one of the other things to take into account is technology moves really, really fast. And the way you break into systems yesterday, you know, versus how you're going to do it tomorrow, does tend to change over time. So what I wonder to myself is, when this legislation, when they get the law wrong, and, you know, laws tend to be wrong at times, how are they going to react to that? Are we going to be able to see iteration in the law so to make sure that we're actually prosecuting the cases that we want and not ensnaring a bunch of the researchers that are trying to do the world good and, you know, try to keep them out of harm's way?
So in your original question about what law or what can they not prosecute that they need these changes in order to prosecute, with regard to the RICO predicate, which I think is dangerous, as I said, I don't see why they can't charge under conspiracy. You can get people who are not actually involved in the actual carrying out of a CFAA violation, but if they're involved in the planning, then you can get them for conspiracy. So why then add a RICO predicate, which is even looser and broader than conspiracy, which is quite broad? I think that their argument is that RICO has actually harsher penalties than conspiracy, but that's, I don't think, a compelling argument. For the criminalization of trafficking in any means of access, I think that what they were trying to get at there is people who are selling access to botnets. So, you know, we will sell you the ability to access a botnet for various purposes. And I think that is already forbidden under the CFAA. So, and even if that's true, I mean, even if they're just after botnets, then what they've drafted is much, much broader and has a very negative impact on academic and professional security researchers.
And just one other thing to add to the discussion from a security researcher point of view, there's no clear way, you know, because the language is ambiguous and maybe it's meant to be, but who do we ask in the day-to-day course of doing our work? Like, how do we know if what the work that we're doing is illegal or meant to be illegal? It's like, what's the course of action when we're trying to figure out the answer to that question so we can stay on the right side of the law?
That's a really, really good point. And so let's drill down a little bit on what some of the potential ramifications are if this were to come to fruition legislatively. What specific day-to-day activities, tools, I know there's been discussion about what this means for penetration testing, vulnerability disclosure. Can you talk a little about what some of those tools of the trade for security researchers, how they would be affected by this?
Well, the thing is that security research, no matter what laws are passed, are not going to stop. I mean, you know, researchers are going to be either a lot of them are going to be oblivious to the law, and they're just going to do work in, you know, in their labs and whatever else. But I do remember several years back when Germany, quote unquote, outlawed hacking tools. You know, it's probably the best way to describe it. And at the very least, the question will arise: well, I'm a security researcher, and I'm going to Germany to present some security research at a conference. Is that safe to do? Am I going to get held up at the border? Am I going to get arrested in a foreign country? And I imagine for a lot of those that live outside the U.S., you know, if we pass these laws, they're at the very least they're going to have similar questions. Am I going to get in trouble for my work? And then if so, you know, who do I ask about that? So at the very least, there'll be at least that question and a chilling effect there.
Would say that unfortunately the administration's proposal would make things worse for security researchers, but the bad news is that the CFAA is currently so broad that it actually already does criminalize a lot of what security researchers do. And the truth is that many folks are relying on prosecutorial discretion not to get charged. The CFAA in most jurisdictions, according to the Department of Justice, you know, we disagree with this interpretation, but the Department of Justice believes that the CFAA criminalizes a breach of terms of service or a website notice. And this is current law, not even the proposal that they had. And even under the more restrictive circuits, like the Ninth Circuit and the Fourth Circuit, through court rulings, they determined that the CFAA does not criminalize just a breach of terms of service, but rather it criminalizes you only if you are circumventing a technological protection measure. But there's no actual clarity on how effective that technological protection measure has to be. It could be as simple as changing your IP address or sharing your login credentials with somebody that the website doesn't want you to share those login credentials with. So there is, in fact, a huge problem with the law as it exists today, even setting aside the Obama administration's legislative proposal.
What about vulnerability? I'm sorry, go ahead, Jeremiah, sorry.
No problem. Just one other thing to add to that. And as was mentioned, they're going to increase the penalties for breaking the law. And, you know, the CFAA penalties were already pretty harsh. I was, you know, wondering, like, why is it necessary to increase harsh penalties even harsher? Are we really thinking that it's going to act as a deterrent? You know, I struggle with that one also.
You know what I think it is? I think that they want harsher penalties so that they can extract guilty pleas and possible cooperation from suspects. That's the only reason I can think that they want it. You know, I think that there is an understanding within law enforcement that people who are determined to violate the CFAA for nefarious purposes are going to do so. But I think that they want, once they catch a suspect, to present that suspect with a very big number in order to force a guilty plea or to force cooperation. That's my guess.
That's a really good point, because we have heard more of discussion of law enforcement wanting to, you know, have more power over or some of these to get more chances for convictions and indictments. So that totally makes sense. One thing I'm still a little bit unclear on, maybe you guys could talk about this too, is how would this affect, you know, sort of vulnerability disclosure as we see it today? Like, I know one of the examples of concern was Google's Project Zero, for example, might be negatively affected by this. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, whether it's HackerOne, Google Project Zero, and 1,000 other places where 0 days and vulnerabilities come out, and what does it mean for all those folks? I mean, these are that very question: is that entity, Google Project Zero, or the others, is that become illegal? And by working with them as a researcher, am I then am I caught up in conspiracy themselves? But so at the very, very least, at the very minimum, there's going to be a lot of these questions posed, but not a whole lot of great answers, unfortunately.
Like I said, I think that the administration's proposal would make make it worse for security researchers and academics who are disclosing vulnerabilities. But unfortunately, I think that much of security research is actually already illegal under the CFAA. So even if you're part of a program, like a bug bounty program, and if you are violating terms of service or circumventing a technological protection measure, or under the DMCA, if you are circumventing a technical protection to access a copyrighted work like software, even if you are not doing it with the intent of committing a crime and you're doing it as part of a bounty program, then those things can still technically be a violation of the law. These are laws that were written a long time ago. The CFAA was written in 1986, and it is in dire need of reform. Because, as I said, I think that much security research is safe only because prosecutors are not taking up the cases, which I think is a scary thought.
You know, it's kind of interesting when you use the year 1986. I mean, the law was drafted pre-web, like pre-internet as we know it. That's pretty interesting.
It was drafted the same year as the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. It was actually a big year for computer law.
Interesting. So the assumption here, I think, is that nobody from the security community was involved in this process. They weren't consulted in any way or, you know, advising in any way. That sort of seems to be the case. And I know there's been a lot of discussion in the community since all this kind of came out, but what, if anything, is the community doing now to kind of, you know, to talk to the administration or lobby Congress? What can be done to sort of prevent this potential fallout?
Well, so I can't speak for the community at large, but I do know that there are some companies and individuals who are working with groups like the Center for Democracy and Technology or the Electronic Frontier Foundation and other groups, and we all are talking to the Department of Justice and to members of Congress. And with some effect, I mean, I can tell you I sat in on a call with folks from the Department of Justice about the administration's proposal. Unfortunately, it was after the proposal was already introduced to the public, which strikes me as sort of the opposite way to go about things. And there was some, I think that they realized that there was some validity to our concerns, especially about the trafficking and any means of access. I don't know what has come out of that since then, whether they're going to be revising the proposal, but I can, you know, certainly tell you that we've made our concerns known, not just groups, but also, as I said, some of the companies, cybersecurity companies as well. In terms of lobbying Congress, I know that there are groups and companies that are lobbying Congress to avoid further expansion of the CFAA. In a completely unrelated discussion, this has actually come up for me today from a potential legislation from a member of Congress, and I explained to them why this was a bad idea. So it is happening. There are people in Washington who are looking out for internet freedom. Unfortunately, there is a tremendous amount of education that needs to be done. And for the security researcher community, I think that there's not a great understanding about what the community does or its great value for cybersecurity. I don't think there's a great deal of understanding about that among lawmakers. But I think the good news is that the understanding is growing slowly.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Just a couple of comments there. On one sense, they're trying to outlaw security research, or at least that's what it looks like on paper. And at the same time, the Pentagon is trying to hire 3,000 new cybersecurity warriors, I guess they call it. So there's kind of a conundrum there. But the other thing is when this new legislation comes to pass from the research community, from most of the people I talk to, they're pretty disconnected from the bill-making process or the law-making process and kind of taking a wait-and-see approach to things. And, you know, the security research and the vulnerabilities, they're not going to stop. They're going to be released in the U.S. or they're going to be released somewhere else. So yeah, it's just the way it's going to be.
Well, I would really urge members of the community to get involved. Not letting your voice be heard is not going to produce results, unfortunately. And when I say making your voice heard, that involves really old-fashioned styles of communication, such as emailing your congressman or calling on the phone. I think an email is probably the best way to do it. Most members of Congress are not reading their tweets. They're not, you know, they're probably not listening to Dark Reading. They're probably not, they're not reading comments to a news story. But when I worked in Congress for 2 years, and I can tell you that at least my boss, she read every single email and we were supposed to respond to every single email. And a lot of other offices do the same thing. So it may seem frustrating, it may seem very low tech, but that sort of thing does have an impact if enough people do it. If there is a vacuum, then that vacuum will be filled by other people like law enforcement or lawyers and bureaucrats. They really need to hear from the technology community. And I can point to at least one thing in the administration's proposal that does indicate that there is an understanding that the CFA is too broad. It's a small thing, but it is new. They've come out with CFA proposals for years, sometimes public, sometimes less public, but this is not the first time that a problematic CFA proposal has come from the administration or from the Department of Justice or from within Congress. But what is new in the Obama administration's proposal is that there is a provision there which does walk back the idea that CFAA can be used to prosecute violations of terms of service. It's a minor concession. It has a lot of loopholes. It still falls short of where the law is under the court cases that I mentioned in the Ninth and the Fourth Circuit. But that is a brand new thing coming from the Department of Justice. It is an admission that hey, we can refine the law a little bit in this area. So it is a small sign, but it does show that this sort of that raising awareness like this is having an impact.
You make a good point about reaching out into the lawmakers with emails and whatever other means as you recommended. But at the same time, I would invite them, the politicians that are interested in security research and what we think about the laws and how we think about the space in general, to show up at one of our high-end security conferences, of which there are many. I'll go personally meet them at Black Hat if they want to, and I'll give them a tour of the place.
So kind of what I'm hearing here is that even if this were to move forward as is, it wouldn't necessarily stop the wheels of security research. But what makes me wonder, like, if that were to happen, would it take a test court case to kind of get a change? I mean, do you think, Carly, it could get to that point, or do you think changes are going to happen before it gets to that point?
It's hard to say. There are court cases on CFAA right now. There's one in New York, U.S. versus Vail, that may or may not produce a favorable result. And there is legislation in Congress. I think the only CFAA bill that I'm aware of right now is my former boss, Representative Lofgren. I think that she's already reintroduced Aaron's Law, which would make positive changes to CFA. It would actually help out, in my opinion, a great deal, certainly more than the administration's proposal. Which is going to happen first? I'm really not sure. If I had to guess, unfortunately, I think that some small CFAA negative CFAA changes will be inserted into some bill at some point, and that would probably pass. The Congress, as you mentioned, is paying a good deal of attention to cybersecurity, which is a whole other issue. I think that the cybersecurity bill that was unveiled in the Senate has a host of surveillance problems, but it would not surprise me to see somebody try to pass an amendment to that that includes something on CFAA.
So, Jeremiah, do you think that the security industry in some ways has maybe panicked a little bit here and this probably isn't going to be as bad as we think? Or do you think that this is a serious concern and that everybody's really has every right to be really worried and that it could have potential negative fallout?
I think, I can't speak for everybody in the community. I can tell you the way I think about it is that there's going to be laws passed. I mean, there's nothing stopping that now. I mean, there's just too many high-profile headlines for some kind of laws not to pass to show that the government is doing something. And they're likely, going to be flawed in many ways. Do I think when they pass one of these laws, if I and others are going to be instantly a criminal and instantly prosecuted? No, probably not. It's going to be, very selective. They're going to put weight on somebody for whatever reason. And I think probably, at the very least, we're just going to have more cases very similar to the sad story of Aaron Schwartz on, using CFAA and things like it to prosecute people that were probably not what we intended to. The people were probably not the people in the cases we wanted to prosecute when the laws were originally defined. Or we want to go after organized crime and nation-state sponsored attacks and things like that. Things that were know, profit motivated, where intent really, really matters. But there's going to be on these unfortunate cases where the laws will just extend a little too far and prosecute somebody that we probably shouldn't.
So I guess sort of I'd like to get both your thoughts on sort of the lesson learned here for the security industry in terms of, you know, this happening again. I mean, we're going to have another administration in 2 years. You know, what if they come up with a whole different, you know, more aggressive approach and we go through this all over again? What is sort of the lesson here for the industry and how to, you know, be more involved in this process or become more a part of the process and to educate the legislative and administrative side of things a little bit better about what you guys do on a daily basis?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that that's the key, which is to reach out to members of Congress, their staffs, and members of the executive branch, particularly the Department of Justice, but also on the state level. I mean, there's a fair number of state-level prosecutions. And to hopefully support the work of groups like the Center for Democracy and Technology, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and others who are already working to try to narrow some of these laws. And a piece of advice, if you do try to get engaged into this, which I certainly hope that members of the community do, is to not have really high hopes for sweeping change to happen all of a sudden. In D.C. and probably many other places, but in Washington, D.C., it appears that any progress is made slowly. It's made by increments. And there's so many people that are working on so many different things that it takes a great deal of coordination. But there are people who are here fighting for Internet freedom and who do believe in it. And so you will find yourself in good company.
I think the lesson learned, I guess maybe it's just the statement of what's going on here, is that the skills and the work that we do in the information security industry, the research we provide, is extremely important now and powerful now than it's ever been. I mean, it's swaying elections. It's affecting the financial system, the healthcare system. There's not a day that goes by that there's not a major breach or some new vulnerability comes out that, you know, affects the entirety of the Internet and economies. And that anytime there's a group or a segment of the world, a populace that carries such power, they're going to want to regulate it to some way, shape, or form. So it's kind of it signifies our position in the world, and that we've gained more power than we might realize. And then to Harley's point, you know, if we don't get involved in the process and help regulate ourselves, somebody's going to do it for us, and they're probably going to do it badly.
That's a really good point. So we're getting a little close to the end of the half hour here before we go to our online chat. So I wanted to just see if you guys had anything else you wanted to add to wrap it up, and then I'll kick it back to Kurt. But I didn't know if there's anything else you wanted to point out that we didn't get a chance to touch on.
I think that the thing I'd want to point out is in press stories, the media does not always talk about solutions that exist. There's a lot of discussion about problems in various areas of the law, including CFA and security research. But I would urge both members of the press and the public to take a look at, to do a little bit of research into whether or not there are solutions that have been proposed, particularly in Congress. And an example of that is Representative Lofgren's Aaron's Law. You know, there's a great deal of press around the administration's CFAA proposal and how bad it is, but in most reports that I saw, there was no mention of the fact that a better proposal has already been floated, and that was Aaron's Law. And so I think that if people are not aware of the solutions, and then it's a lot harder to advocate for them.
I'm not going to add anything. That's probably makes a really good point. I like that one a lot. You know, citing problems without making suggestions. I think we could do better there as an industry, and that's a good a point as any.
Yeah, no, that was really good to bring it back to that, Harley. I think that you're right. You did get lost in the discussion a little bit with the administration proposal, so that's a really good point. And so I want to thank you guys for your time today, Jeremiah and Harley. It was a great discussion, and we have time to do the online chat. Now, if anyone has questions, I'm going to kick it back to Kurt, who can send us over to the online chat.
Thank you so much, Kelly. As everyone said, this has been a great discussion, and it's not over yet. It's simply changing venue from the audio portion to our online chat. And now is the time when you, the listener, can ask your questions directly to our panelists. Now, remember that to take part in the conversation, all you have to do is to type your comment or question into the box labeled your post, then be sure to click on that big red post button beneath it. Dark Reading Radio comes to you every month with the best in enterprise security. Always super topics, great guests. If you've missed any of the existing shows, feel free to head back over to the Dark Reading Radio's tab. Click on our on-demand shows. You can listen to any of those on demand at any time. We also encourage you to join us here at UBM for other radio shows on Fridays at 3 p.m. We have This Information Week, when we talk about the big IT stories of the week. And every Tuesday at 3 p.m., there's Interop Radio, the online audio portion of the Interop community. Well, for Kelly Jackson Higgins and everyone at Dark Reading Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you in that online discussion.